About a month ago, I got a new email address for my financial advisory work, and ever since then, I've been intrigued by spam. Not the canned meat, the unsolicited junk emails. Somehow, this change in email address released a torrent of spam with several consistent themes, at least ones I can think of here or speak of here. First, money. You've won money, you've inherited money, you can earn more money, you can borrow money for free. Status. You're invited to join who's who. You're invited to an elite political gathering for money. You're invited to an exclusive resort for more money. And third, power through information. You must read this blog, this Substack, follow this op-ed writer, this Instagram page, to know what others are thinking. And when you know what everyone else is thinking, then you know what to think too. Most of these emails are designed to look like legitimate communication. And because they're scattered among emails from my clients and team, I end up reading at least the subject line, if not a couple of sentences. And over the last month, I've realized that taken all together, these spam are a mirror of a prevailing narrative in our culture. That to be successful and safe and highly esteemed, you must have wealth and status and power over others. This is a false narrative, of course, we know that. But it's thrived in dominant cultures for millennia and is fully operative today. Which is why when I studied the first reading we heard today, I felt a real kinship with the prophet Jeremiah. He's from the 6th century BCE, and this passage that we heard today is a conversation between him and a competing prophet, Hananiah. And they are competing in their prophecies in Jerusalem at a really crucial time. The Babylonians have invaded the city, and they've sent the king into exile, leaving the people helpless and afraid. And as they wonder what to do, Jeremiah steps up and declares, "You, Judah, have lost your protected status because you have broken your covenant with God. You worship false gods. You allow the corrupt elite to get rich while ignoring the suffering of others. Therefore," Jeremiah says, "you will be conquered by the Babylonians. And you will only survive if you submit and enter your own time of exile." Now, you can imagine this news does not make Jeremiah very popular. He is vilified and imprisoned, but he continues to speak the truth to people who only want to hear good news. Enter Hananiah, a prophet who knows how to deliver what people want. He says, "No worries. Judah will prevail. All will be restored. Everything's fine. No need to change anything." And the reading that we heard today is Jeremiah's response to that. And although it's hard to tell from just the piece that we read, it is pure sarcasm. Jeremiah says, "Amen. May God help us, and may all be well. But remember, the prophets who came before us proclaimed that only strife comes from breaking a covenant with God. So if you prophesy peace without reconciliation with God, I'll believe God sent you when I see that peace." So Jeremiah is calling out his culture's obsession and illusion of comfort and peace at a time when the powerful mock God, the powerless suffer, and the enemy is at their doorstep, ready to conquer. Walter Brueggemann writes about the three tasks of the prophet, ancient and modern. And this insistence on facing reality is the first task. Living among people convinced of their chosenness, prophets expose that narrative by shining a light on the reality of the world they're living in, a reality that in no way conforms to the dominant narrative. Prophets name the religious hypocrisy, the injustice and the greed that lie underneath these phony reassurances of well-being, and they give urgency to the needs of the marginalized and the vulnerable. Jeremiah says, "The wicked have grown fat and sleek. They do not judge the cause of the orphan with justice, and they do not defend the right of the needy." So think of a prophet giving an unrelenting wake-up call. Look here. Things are not good, and it's going to get worse if you ignore it. And some listeners do wake up, but others can't bear the bad news, so they hit the snooze button of denial. And that's where a prophet's second task comes in. Because they counter this denial with the public practice of grief. Grief that details what is lost and vividly describes the pain and the bewilderment and the rage that comes with full understanding of what's wrong. Jeremiah cries, "My anguish, I writhe in pain. Disaster overtakes disaster. The whole land is a total waste." This is lament, where a prophet uses their skills and their courage and their force of presence to get their community to fully experience their loss. And when the people do embrace their sorrow, finally, that's when an acute sense of vulnerability and abandon can set in. Where is God in all this death and destruction, they wonder? And that is when a prophet is most needed. The prophet's third task is, amid this despair, they declare hope and they embody hope. Hope for a resilient future held securely in God's grasp. Jeremiah proclaims later in his book, "This is the word of the Lord. Do not fear nor be panicked, Israel. For I am going to rescue you from afar, and once more you will be tranquil. Do not fear, for I am with you." A prophet articulates hope not based on an imagined better future, or on it based in confidence of human skill or intelligence. A prophet articulates hope only based on the power and faithfulness of God right now. Reality, grief, and hope. Those are the three tasks of a prophet. So who are the prophets today? Who are the ones who challenge our dominant narrative about wealth and status or fame? And who are the ones that reground us in the deep knowledge that abundant life and safety comes in relationship to each other and God, and love for neighbor and love for God? Who does that for you? Prophets don't have to be religious or famous. For me, I think of the Reverend William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. I think of Maria Ressa, co-founder of Rappler. And I think of the musician Bruce Springsteen, just saying. But I'm not sure that all prophets are human. What about creation? Consider the health of our air and water, the extreme weather resulting in wildfires and floods. Maybe this is Earth's wake-up call to the reality of hyperconsumption and economic inequality. And even if we deny it, Earth points us to what is lost and urges us to grieve for climate refugees, for declining salmon populations, for disappearing glaciers. And then, when the pain of it all tempts us to despair like the prophets, Earth shows reasons to hope. Do you remember during the pandemic how once human activity was constrained, pulled back, how cities that were very polluted began to have clean air, and animals returned to their natural habitat? And Earth shows hope every day when we see the beauty and resilience in nature, and we see that it reflects the creativity and the resilience and power of God. Earth is a prophet, too. If we are to follow Jesus, we must take the prophet's vocation seriously. And while there are some individuals who have the gifts and the courage and the presence of Jeremiah, I wonder if this vocation of naming reality and holding grief and offering hope is best lived in community. Because if we really want to be able to see the full contours of reality, to endure the rawness of lament, and to draw from the deep wells of God's abiding presence, we need the gifts of everyone. Scientists and artists and teachers and healers and wisdom bearers of all ages. Children can be prophets. So I ask you, where will you take your place in this holy vocation?